Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WAJR-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now, your host, author, teacher, and pastor, Doug Joseph.
Hello, and welcome to the broadcast. Normally, we focus on eternal issues and leave current events to those who are dedicated to covering that aspect of life. But sometimes there is a merger between eternal things and current events, and we simply can no longer stay silent regarding current events. And we are at one such point in time right now. I'm talking to you about the possibility of a nuclear Iran, which has ensconced in its constitution the annihilation of Israel, and the fact that the Lord God Almighty, through His Word in the Holy Bible, told us that those who bless Israel, He will bless, and those who curse Israel, He will curse. No doubt by now, you're piecing together that we will touch on the fact that several in America are making a big deal about some alleged breach of protocol by Benjamin Netanyahu in coming to speak to a joint session of Congress. And I want to talk to you about Israel and debunk some of the myths regarding Israel. One of the most clever things that the enemy of your soul can do is to trick you into fighting against good while having you think you're fighting against evil. And when he succeeds in this, he can get people to side with evil against good while viewing themselves as heroes and thinking that they are fighting for the right. And this is the case regarding Israel. First, I want to talk to you about why some in America, unfortunately, it will sound partisan when I say this, it's just simply the fact of the matter, that all of those that are talking about boycotting Benjamin Netanyahu's speech to the joint session of Congress happen to all be Democrats. But one of the reasons I think why these folks think they're fighting for the right in this boycott of his speech is that they have bought into some lies and deception about Israel. With regard to that, I want to bring you an article, an op-ed piece in the LA Times that was written by Michael Oren. And the title is, Israel Isn't and Will Never Be an Apartheid State. The war against Israel has passed through three phases. The first was the attempt to annihilate Israel by conventional means. It began with Israel's birth in 1948, when Arab armies nearly captured Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and ended in the 1973 Yom Kippur War, when Israeli forces came within artillery range of Cairo and Damascus. The next stage, starting in the early 1970s, sought to cripple Israel through terror. Suicide bombers nearly paralyzed the country, but by 2005, they too were defeated. That is when Israel's enemies launched the third and potentially most devastating campaign to isolate, delegitimize, and sanction Israel into extinction. And the key weapon in this stage is the hugely destructive word apartheid. Translated from Afrikaans, apartheid means aparthood. It stemmed from the deeply held racist beliefs of South African whites who, in the half century after World War II, imposed strict legal barriers between themselves and all black people. The segregation was total. Separate restaurants, separate toilets, drinking fountains, separate houses, hospitals, and schools. Blacks were denied the right to vote. The system resembled the American South under Jim Crow and outlived it by several decades. Thereafter, apartheid remained synonymous with undiluted racism, second only in hatefulness to Nazism. Today, the word apartheid is wielded by Israel's enemies to delegitimize the Jewish state. Adversaries point to the separation between Israeli settlers and Palestinian residents of the West Bank, separate Israeli and Palestinian roads, and separate schools, hospitals, and legal systems. Although Israelis can elect their leaders, opponents of Israel say Palestinians cannot. They claim that Israel has erected an apartheid wall between Jewish and Arab areas. Yet none of this even remotely resembles apartheid. The vast majority of settlers and Palestinians choose to live apart because of cultural and historical differences, not segregation, though thousands of them do work side by side. The separate roads were created in response to terrorist attacks, not to segregate Palestinians, but to save Jewish lives. And Israeli roads are used by Israeli Jews and Arabs alike. The separation of schools is, again, a cultural choice, similar to that made by secular and Orthodox Jews and Muslim and Christian Palestinians. Many Palestinians, however, study in Israeli institutions, such as Ariel University, located in a settlement. Thousands of Palestinians, many of them from Hamas-controlled Gaza, are treated in Israeli hospitals. Israelis can indeed vote for their leaders, and so too can the Palestinians. But the Palestinian Authority has refused to hold elections for years. Palestinians are indeed tried under Israeli, originally British, military codes for security infractions. But other cases are referred to Palestinian courts. And even on security-related issues, Palestinians can appeal to Israel's Supreme Court. Israel has erected a security barrier. Only a small section is actually walled between it and most of what is now known as the West Bank, historically known as Judea and Samaria. But the barrier, a vital counterterrorism tool, is not permanent and has been moved several times to accommodate Palestinian interests. It is no more an apartheid wall than the fence between the United States and Mexico. The West Bank represents a complex historical, humanitarian, and security situation that six Israeli prime ministers from both the left and right have tried to resolve. Unfortunately, Palestinian leaders turned down Israeli offers of statehood in the year 2000 and 2008 and have now abandoned peace talks in favor of reunification with Hamas. They aspire to create a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza from which all Jews have been expelled. That is truly apartheid. Outside of the West Bank, in Jerusalem and elsewhere in Israel, Jews and Arabs mix freely and increasingly live in the same neighborhoods. Arabs serve in Israel's parliament, in its army, and on its Supreme Court. And though discrimination in Israel, as in America, remains a scourge, there is no imposed segregation. Go to any Israeli mall, any restaurant, or hospital, and you will see Arabs and Jews interacting. This reality has not prevented Israel's enemies from branding it with the apartheid label. They do so not to achieve a better peace arrangement with Israel, but to isolate it internationally and to eliminate it through sanctions. The author, Michael Oren, writes, "We Jews remember how each attempt to obliterate us, whether in the Inquisition or during the Holocaust, was preceded by a campaign to delegitimize us. People who practice apartheid are easily considered illegitimate. Israel is not an apartheid state and will not become one, even if the Palestinians continue to reject peace. However, unwittingly, those who associate apartheid with Israel are aiding the third and perhaps ultimate stage in the effort to destroy the nation. They are also committing a grave injustice to the millions of American and South African blacks who were the victims of true apartheid. That's the end of the article, and let me mention that Michael Oren, Israel's ambassador to the United States from 2009 to 2013, is a senior fellow in international diplomacy at the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya and a fellow at the Atlantic Council. Now, you may be thinking, well, sure, that's Israel defending Israel. Well, let me bring you a statement from South Africa's de Klerk. Israel is not an apartheid state. He's the former president under whose watch segregation in South Africa was ended. He says it's unfair to use the term apartheid. This article is posted on the timesofisrael.com. Frederick William de Klerk, the former president of South Africa, who negotiated to end his country's apartheid regime, said Tuesday that it was unfair to refer to Israel as an apartheid state. Quote, "You have closed borders, but America has closed borders. They don't allow every Mexican who wants to come in," said de Klerk, who was in Israel to receive an honorary doctorate from Haifa University. This in an interview with Channel 2. As opposed to the racial segregation in South Africa, quote, "You have Palestinians living in Israel with full political rights, and you don't have discriminatory laws against them. I mean, not letting them swim on certain beaches or anything like that. I think it's unfair to call Israel an apartheid state. If Secretary of State John Kerry did so, I think he made a mistake." In April, Kerry had said that Israel was liable to become an apartheid state if, in the absence of a two-state solution, it chose to annex all or part of the West Bank without granting full citizenship to the Palestinians. He later retracted his remarks. Now, in the interview with de Klerk, when the interviewer interjected to clarify that Kerry had stressed that Israel was not at present an apartheid state, de Klerk said that in a future scenario, Israel could only be deemed apartheid if it became a binational state and its binational government discriminated against Arabs. The test will be, does everyone living then in such a unitary state, will everybody have full political rights? Will everybody enjoy their full human rights? If they will, it's not an apartheid state, he said. The Nobel Peace Prize winner also cautioned Israel that the chance to secure a two-state solution was slowly slipping away and urged the government to act quickly. Quote, "I'm not saying it's the right solution for Israel, but there will come in Israel a turning point where if the main obstacles of the moment which exist for a successful two-state solution are not removed, the two-state solution will become impossible," he said. Quote, "So as an outsider, I would say, believing that a two-state solution might be the best one, you'll have to move fast. See the window of opportunity, jump through it. It might close," end quote. The former president provided insight into the tactics he had used with Nelson Mandela to reach an agreement to end apartheid, which he compared to an economic omelet. Quote, "Once you make an omelet out of eggs," he said, "you can never separate the yellow and the white again." De Klerk insisted that, quote, "to break a deadlock, you need initiatives," and that mutual empathy was critical in overcoming the initial hurdles. He maintained that, quote, "our biggest success was when Mandela put himself in my position and went out of his way to understand my position, and I, at the same time, put myself in Mandela's position. We sat down and drew a list. What do we agree upon? And the list was longer than we expected. And then slowly but surely, we worked first on the easier things and later moved on to the more divisive issues," he said. In an apparent subtle rebuke of U.S. intervention in the Israeli-Palestinian talks, de Klerk stressed that, quote, "in the end, we forced ourselves. We weren't forced by others. We forced ourselves to say, we have made such big progress, we must now resolve these most difficult ones." In a March interview with the Oxford Student paper, de Klerk reiterated that Israel was not an apartheid state. but that both Israelis and Palestinians, quote, need to take certain initiatives, including the recognition of Israel and the establishment of viable borders for a future Palestinian state. Quote, I think the starting point from the Palestinian side is they must acknowledge the right of Israel as a state to exist, and they must say we want to be a good neighbor to their state. He went on to say, and Israel needs to look at offering the Palestinians a geographic state of which they can be proud. So the borders are important, but also from the Arab and Palestinian side, the unqualified acknowledgement of the right of the state of Israel to exist. That's the end of the article, and it ends at a perfect point for me to interject. This is the huge issue, the impasse, if you will. Sadly, a majority of Palestinian Arabs are so filled with hatred that has been passed down from generation to generation, hatred of Jews and hatred of Israel, that they absolutely refuse to acknowledge Israel's right to exist. And because of this, and the fact that they are determined to annihilate Israel, to wipe them out, their slogan is from the river to the sea, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. They want to push the Jews out of the land and utterly annihilate them. This is the reason, ultimately, why peace talks keep breaking down. Israel offered land to Egypt in exchange for peace, and Egypt said yes. Every time that anyone of Israel's neighbors has accepted land for peace and said yes, Israel has honored that agreement. The Palestinians will not take yes for an answer. And so they continually fire rockets into Israel, sniper bullets, and there was that long period of time of them sending suicide bombers wearing vests packed with explosives. Only extreme security measures have been able to bring that terrible practice to a grinding halt. And so this brings us to the recent development of Boehner inviting Netanyahu to come and speak to a joint session of Congress. And with regard to that, I want to illustrate how that the media, in its hatred of Israel and in its desire to garner news ratings by continually bashing Israel, they have aided and abetted the terrorists, and they are creating a real problem by generating a firestorm of criticism for Netanyahu and Israel over what really ought to be a non-starter of an issue. Now, before I read an article by Ed Lasky published on AmericanThinker.com regarding the whole issue about Boehner and Obama and Netanyahu, let me mention, first of all, that Iran has been working for decades to gain a nuclear bomb technology. And side by side with that, they are also working to gain ICBM delivery technology, intercontinental ballistic missile delivery technology. Now, Iran exports their missile weapons to Hezbollah. And from the location of the terrorist Hezbollah forces, they do not need ICBM technology to deliver nukes to Israel. Why are they seeking ICBM technology? Because they have higher aspirations than just annihilating Israel. Do you know they call Israel the little Satan? Do you know who they call the great Satan? The United States of America. And when you listen to what they say to their followers in Arabic, for instance, this is a statement recently made in Iran. Our dear Imam, a reference to Khomeini, you stated that the arrogant powers of the world must be annihilated. The countdown of America's sinister power has begun. Death to America. Recently, they staged a test attack on a mock-up that represented an American aircraft carrier. And the concept of being able to have a barge in the Atlantic that can launch a missile into the United States is clearly part of their thinking. Not only to launch nuclear attack on our cities, but to launch an electromagnetic attack by detonating a nuclear device in the air above America, which would effectively take down our entire power grid. We need to understand that if we stand with Israel, we're not only benefiting our greatest ally and strongest democratic defender of freedom in the Middle East, we are acting in our own best interest by standing with Israel and preventing Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons. This is the backdrop in which Boehner asks Netanyahu to come to speak to a joint session of Congress. Here's the article by Ed Lasky, published in the American Thinker, January 31, 2015. The story that Boehner blindsided Obama on Netanyahu regarding the imitation was manufactured agitprop. A correction appearing in the New York Times quietly unravels what has become a major story as phony agitprop intended to discredit the leaders of Israel and the House of Representatives. Of course, the story is still believed by many and has well served those in the White House and media who created it and disseminated it. Omri Sarin spotted the correction and explained on Twitter, "New York Times tries to promote anti-Netanyahu talking point that Israel blindsided Obama. They got just one tiny detail wrong." Here's the correction, posted January 30. An earlier version of this article misstated when Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel accepted Speaker John A. Boehner's invitation to address Congress. He accepted after the administration had been informed of the invitation, not before. Little tiny footnote correction. In 2011, Boehner sent a notice to the White House stating his intention to invite Netanyahu to speak before a joint session of Congress. The White House never responded. Spite? Incompetence? And Boehner proceeded to extend the invitation to Netanyahu. Netanyahu accepted the invitation and spoke. The White House did not express any outrage in 2011. That was before the 2012 re-election, of course, so Obama did not want to run the risk of losing any support. But that was then, and this is now. And as Barack Obama has reminded us, he will never be on a ballot again, so he can do whatever he wants now and go full Bullworth, as he told close aides he wanted to do in his second term. Boehner clearly assumed the same series of events was occurring when the White House failed to respond this time to notice given to the White House before he sent an invite to Netanyahu. The White House deliberately created this crisis to impugn Netanyahu and undercut support for him and Israel. No less than Senator Harry Reid blamed this diplomatic faux pas entirely on Boehner and Netanyahu for undercutting support for Israel among Democrats. The media, or much of it, has been relentlessly attacking Israel over a lie promoted by people in the administration. By the way, this is the White House again employing what they call the theory of stray voltage. The politicos at the White House used the same underhanded tactic when they created controversy over the purported wage gap between men and women. From the Weekly Standard, this is the White House theory of stray voltage. It is the brainchild of former White House senior advisor David Plouffe, whose methods loom large long after his departure. The theory goes like this. Controversy sparks attention, attention provokes conversation, and conversation embeds previously unknown or marginalized ideas in the public consciousness. This happens, Plouffe theorizes, even when, and sometimes especially when, the White House appears defensive, besieged, or off guard. While the moniker stray voltage may make the concept sound exciting to political reporters, let's call it what it is, agitprop to advance an agenda. If the pay gap was a previously unknown or marginalized idea, that's because it deserves to be marginalized. In this regard, we're sure that, quote, if you like your health insurance plan, you can keep your health insurance plan, was just another example of stray voltage. Can you blame the president? How else was he supposed to convince people a federal takeover of healthcare shouldn't remain a marginalized idea? The practice is abhorrent, ask Mitt Romney, especially when used against a beleaguered ally of America that faces promises that it will be destroyed once Iran has nuclear weapons. Barack Obama once said, before a pro-Israel crowd, before the election, that he had Israel's back. Yes, he does. He has it all right, just where he wants it, up against a wall. I have no desire to be political, and support of Israel in America runs the gamut from liberal to conservative, left wing, right wing. There are pro-life, pro-gun, pro-Israel Democrats, and pro-life, pro-gun, pro-Israel Republicans. There are Democrats and Republicans that are pro-Israel, even if they're not pro-life or pro-Second Amendment. This is not and ought not be a partisan issue. There has been delay after delay and extension after extension in dealing with Iran. And all the while that they smile and meet with us and shake our hand and talk to us and refuse to meet deadlines and gain extensions and smile and shake our hand and meet with us or refuse to meet with us, they gain time, 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 time. And they keep the centrifuges spinning. They keep weaponizing the plutonium. They keep making progress toward gaining a nuclear bomb technology. And if we allow that day to come, it will be devastating to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who will suffer a cruel fate of death at the hands of those that hate freedom, hate democracy, hate Israel, and hate America. This is not hard, folks, and it is crucial. We do not have the luxury of inaction. We do not have the luxury of not making a decision and acting decisively. Again, God will bless those who bless Israel, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. I appeal to you to contact your senators and your congresspeople and encourage them to welcome Netanyahu to attend his speech to the joint session of Congress, and to act decisively in standing with our ally, Israel, and decisively in stopping Iran from gaining nuclear weapons. In completely unrelated news, I want to say a huge thank you to all of the many citizens of the Clarksburg-Bridgeport area who have supported our church over the past several years in buying fireworks from our tent. And I have some bad news for you, bad news for us as well. And that is that due to circumstances beyond our control, and we've just been notified that fireworks tents of any kind or of any brand will no longer be allowed in the shopping mall area where we and several other fireworks tents have set up every 4th of July. And so it would appear that unless there is some intervention or change between now and then, this past 4th of July season was your last opportunity to support our church in our efforts to raise funds to try to get built in a better location. As you may know, we have maxed out the size at which our congregation can grow in our current location. We have purchased property in the Lost Creek area, and we are endeavoring to save money to build there. It's looking possible, if the Lord blesses and several important pieces fall in place, it's looking possible that we may be able to break ground as soon as this coming spring. And we encourage you to continue to pray for us. And if you would be so minded as to send a donation to help us in our efforts to save money toward breaking ground, that would be wonderful. And you can contact us through the information on our website, which will be announced in just a few moments. God bless you in Jesus' name.
Thank you for listening. You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WAJR-FM.